is it?
Mrs. Potts, dear. I thought you might like a spot of tea.
But you're a...
Careful!
This is impossible.
I know it is, but here we are.
I told you she was pretty, Mama, didn't I?
All right, Chip, now that'll do. Slowly now, don't spill.
Thank you.
Wanna see me do a trick?
Chip!
Oops,
sorry.
That was a very brave thing you did, my dear.
We all think so.
But I've lost my father, my dreams, everything.
Cheer up, child. It'll turn out all right in the end. You'll see. Oh, listen to me. Jabbering on while there's a supper to get on the table. Chip.
Bye.
Well now, what shall we dress you in for dinner? Oh, let's see what I got in my drawers. Oh, how embarrassing. Oh, here we are. You'll look ravishing in this one.
That's very kind of you, but I'm not going to dinner.
But you must.
Dinner is served.
What's taking so long? I told her to come down. Why isn't she here yet?
Oh, try to be patient, sir. The girl has lost her father and her freedom all in one day.
Master, have you thought that perhaps this girl could be the one to break the spell?
Of course I have. I'm not a fool.
Good. So, you fall in love with her, she falls in love with you, and poof, the spell is broken. We'll be human again by midnight.
Oh, it's not that easy, Lumiere. These things take time.
But the rose has already begun to wilt.
Oh, it's no use. She's so beautiful, and I'm... Well, look at me!
Oh, you must help her to see past all that.
I don't know how.
Well, you can start by making yourself more presentable. Straighten up. Try to act like a gentleman.
Ah, yes. When she comes in, give her a dashing, debonair smile. Come, come, show me the smile.
But don't frighten the poor girl.
Impress her with your rapier wit.
But be gentle.
Shower her with compliments.
But be sincere.
And above all,
you must control your temper. Here she is.
Hello, and welcome to Book vs. Movie. This is a podcast where we read books that have been adapted into movies, and then we try to decide which we like better, the book or the movie. I am Margo P. of ColoniaBook.com, and this is my good friend and co-host, Margo D. of Brooklyn Fit Chick.
Hi, everyone.
We are having a very exciting first time ever in our 7 years of doing this podcast. We are doing all Disney, all November. We've done... So, you know, a Disney movie here and there over the years, just a handful of them, really. Mm-hmm. So this is really kind of our first real deep dive into Disney over the decades. If you are a Disney file, this might drive you crazy because we, neither one of us are Disney scholars or I forget. There's a name for those people that go to all the parks all the time. Anyway, we're not that.
Rich people. I'm sorry. I've been told what it costs to go there, and I'm like, wow.
Indeed. Yeah. Even I think the Disneyland here in Southern California has a resident discount. Even then, it's a lot.
Yeah.
But it's not a lot to watch these movies, fortunately. And we're going to be talking, last time we talked about, if you're just jumping in because you love Beauty and the Beast, we'll tell you that last time we talked about Sleeping Beauty. Mm-hmm. And we are also gearing up for, before we came on the air, we were talking about how in December, we always do holiday books and movies. After 7 years, we've kind of exhausted all of the, you know, possibilities that we can think up off the top of our heads. We've done Die Hard. We've done It's a Wonderful Life. So if you have suggestions for books and movies that you think maybe would be good, kind of holiday theme or anything else, there are a few places where you can make those suggestions, interact with Margo and myself. I'm also named Margo, and other listeners of this podcast on the internet.
Yes, we do have a basic Facebook page. You can like that page. All the episodes are posted there, and you can also leave suggestions there. If you want to join our Facebook group and talk to other fans of the podcast, it's a private group. Just type in Book vs. Movie Podcast Group, ask to join. We're on Twitter and Instagram at Book vs. Movie. You just spell that all out. Or send us an email. It's book versus movie podcast, spell it all out, at gmail.com. We do also have stickers and a couple of magnets left, a couple of coasters, if you want some merch for book versus movie.
That we have now. Again, last time we talked about Sleeping Beauty, which I think is sort of considered the last of the kind of old guard Disney movies. And we're talking about one of the first of the new era of Disney. I think it's the second one that they kind of put out in their era, I guess we're still in. We're going to be talking about Beauty and the Beast. Now, you'll hear us discuss that there are a lot of versions of this movie out there. And even of this book, there's kind of two versions, and we each read a different, slightly different take on the same version, basically. So there are a lot of places where you can find it. You can listen to it as an audiobook. You can find it at your local library. I found mine on the Libby app. I got it for free from my library. You know, normally we're buying the books and movies ourselves. We're buying the books and running the movies. And so if you love this podcast and you would like to help us continue to do that, you can also support us on Patreon.
Yes, I'd like to say thank you to Rosa, who just joined our Patreon page. And for those of you that have, it just helps us pay for things like the hosting costs for the podcast, for the website, and obviously the cost for the books and the movies and just little things like that. Options there for you to check us out. We're putting all of our episodes from 2019 and before that onto that page. But just so you know, there are a few things there that are free, quite a few things there that are free. So if you just want to see for yourself if it's worth the investment, go check it out. Especially sometimes we redo episodes that we did 5, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, I guess it was. Who knows what time it is anymore after the last 19 months. But I want to thank Rosa for doing that. And it's P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com. Just look up Book vs Movie Podcast. And thank you so much.
Thank you, Rosa. Yeah, I forgot to mention that since we've been in this odd pandemic time that we're in, we have been doing a brand new episode every single week. And yeah, I mean, we've been at this for 7 years. Not all of the episodes, you know, from the early days you can easily find on the internet. We know where they are, but so yeah, every now and again we redo something, but this is something we've never done before.
Right.
Today, again, as I said, we're going to be talking about Disney's Beauty and the Beast, based on several French sources, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. As I was watching it this time, I realized that I don't think I've ever seen this movie on the big screen. Did you see it on the big screen when it came out?
Oh my goodness. Did I see it? I had friends that were Disney fans, especially since Little Mermaid was so adorable. That just came out like a year or two before. But I saw, and I posted in our Facebook group, 2020 did a whole episode. And I think this might have been when ABC bought Disney or vice versa. So maybe there was that kind of situation. But Jeffrey Katzenberg's in there. And they go for a year following them up until the film comes out. So I was super pumped when I... So yes, I that long answer to your very short question. Yes, I did see this in the movie theater.
Well, when this movie came out, it's 1991, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So I was in college. I didn't have any small children in my life that I would be taking to the movies.
I took myself.
You know, in those days. So I really didn't, you know, I didn't go and see these when they were in the theater. And I, especially not so much with A Little Mermaid, which I have like I have a little bit of a love-hate relationship with The Little Mermaid. But seeing this movie, I so wish I had seen it on the big screen. I can see how a lot of the scenes would have been so impressive on the big screen. I hope I someday have an opportunity to see it. But let's talk about our source material, because it's very interesting.
It's based, we're talking about fairy tales, which is a whole other thing altogether. So these are stories that go back actually thousands of years. This is in the 1700s that we're talking about today, and our original author that we're talking about is Gabrielle Suzanne de Villanueva, French author. She grew up in very nice high society in Paris, and her story is actually novel length. Pretty much...
It's pretty short. It wasn't that long. Yeah. No, I read it. I would say novella length.
Novella-ish.
It's not quite novel length. Yeah, it's... But it's very cool. I really liked it.
Oh, it's very interesting. And it's the basic story. And then what happened was a few years after she died in the 1740s, I believe it was, or 1756, excuse me, 1756, Jean-Marie Le Prince de Beaumont, she did a version of it. And she made a shorter version, which is what I read and listened to both. And it was in order to help French girls learn a moral of the story. Because the moral of the story is supposed to be looks don't matter. What matters is how good the person is. It's not good to be vain and snotty and all that other stuff like her sisters are. And in both stories, we have a merchant who has six kids, three daughters, three sons, and Beauty is her name.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
In the okay, so I read the long form version, mm-hmm. and Margot D read the abridged version by the second person, right? So these are both 18th century sources. So in my version, there are 12 kids.
In the
Villeneuve, I don't know how you pronounce her. I don't pronounce French at all. Okay. Yeah, there's I think the merchant has 12 kids and Beauty is the youngest of the 12 kids. But anyway, point is, like book versus movie, right off the bat, there are siblings here.
Right.
And I really love the siblings. I think the whole layer of the siblings is important. Yeah, let's talk about them.
In the story that I read is that there's a merchant, and I guess he's a single parent. He's taking care of his kids. And there's a lot of them. And the youngest is a girl named Beauty. And she is so sweet and she's beautiful on the inside and the outside. She's kind. She's hardworking. She's loving. And then when he somehow loses his fortune, he has a few boats and he loses a boat.
Yeah. In the one that I read, it was very interesting. There was a lot about the siblings. There was a lot about the other children. So he's, we don't know what's up with the mom, like what happened to the mom. I guess right. 12 kids, that answered your question. But when the story begins, at least in the longer form one, the merchant is like super wealthy. He's very, very right. wealthy. And consequently, the sons have a lot of like influence. Eligible bachelors, you know,
yeah,
people.
The bourgeoisie.
Yeah, definitely. And the daughters are very materialistic and they have just throngs of men that are trying to marry them. And they're like, no, I don't know. Not you. No, not you. They're very just, they kind of toy with these men because there's just so many of them that are coming after them wanting their hand in marriage. Something happens that the merchant's fleet of ships, because again, that's how you're buying and selling is overseas. There's a terrible storm and it wipes out his entire fleet, he thinks. And so they immediately, they go from riches to rags, right?
And
the friends and the boyfriends dry
hands.
Up. In a snap.
Yeah, they all disappear. So then they have to go live in the country. And he's like, all right, we're going to have to make our own clothes, make our own food, till the land. All right, kids, roll up your sleeves. We're going to do this. And the girls are like, bag that. I'm just going to sleep. I'm not helping.
Yeah, they're like, ew.
Yuck. No.
Work.
The boys, okay. They kind of grudgingly like learn their stuff. But then Beauty within a couple of months is running the joint and she thrives like because she just takes on responsibility. It's no big deal to her. And the father is going to get one of the ships or he.
Yes. Yeah. So they're living like this and they're not loving it, except for Beauty, who's
a good attitude. Yay.
She has a good attitude. She's, I love picking crops. I love getting up at dawn to milk the cows. Yeah. And the sisters are so snotty. I just love like the sisters and brothers. It's really great. Again, this is totally different from the movie. If you only know the story from the movie, father, they get news that somehow one of the father's boats mm-hmm. has been recovered. It was not destroyed after all. So one of his boats, which was completely packed and crammed full with all kinds of riches and amazing stuff that he used to trade in. So he's got one ship. And so he is going to meanwhile, I forgot to say, I can't remember if they live in Paris. they live in a city. They live in a very, they live a very cosmopolitan life when they're rich.
Right.
They have this very ritzy life that they lead. When things go south and they lose all their money and all their friends and all their, you know, influence, they flee really kind of just out of shame. They flee to the country. That's why they're, you know, so he has to go, when he gets the word about his ship, he has to go quite a long way. It's a long trip he's going on mm-hmm. to see about this ship. And so he says to his 12 kids, in my version, he says, okay, kids, I'm going to go, you know, see what's left on this ship. What would you like me to bring you back from the ship? And, you know, the daughters are like, oh, bring us gowns and jewels and bring us this and bring us that and bring us the other thing. And the sons too are like, you know, bring us, I don't know, whatever boys like, bring us gold and maps and I don't know what all.
Just bring us money.
Just bring us money. Exactly.
Yeah.
But Beauty doesn't say that she wants anything from the ship. Like, so he's like, well, Beauty, you didn't mention anything that you want. Can I bring you anything? And she's like, no, I really just want you to come home safely. That's really all I care about. He's like, oh, come on. Come on. Surely you must want something. And she's like, oh, fine. Bring me a rose. Bring me a rose. Because she's already worried that, at least that we have a lot of backstory about in mind about like how considerate she is of everybody. And she's always thinking of everyone. And she's very worried that her father's going on this long trip by himself. He's not in the best of health. She doesn't want to ask him to spend any money on her because she kind of thinks that there's not going to be very much on this ship. So she just asks for a rose because she figures he can get that without spending any money or going to too much trouble. So, okay, fine. Bring me a rose. And so off he goes to see about the ship. And I think when he gets to the ship, in fact, there's like virtually nothing left, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
Who would leave a ship full of stuff? Yeah, I would plunder it. Why wouldn't you? So he doesn't find that much, but then he's heading back home. And then he happens upon this beautiful house and he notices a flower. And at first he meets the beast, right? And then they kind of have a meal.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's not in the best of health. Mm-hmm. He goes on this super long journey on a fool's errand because there's just really nothing left. It's like if you've ever had your car stolen. Have you ever had a car stolen?
Oh yeah.
And they're like, oh, we found your car. And you're like, awesome. And you go down and
it's a long highway, 580.
You're just signing it away to the junkyard. Yeah. It's completely stripped. So it's like that situation. And now he has to make this long journey back. And I don't remember if he gets lost or if he gets sick. Something happens. He gets stuck along the way. And yes, he ends up at this castle with it's got lights on. And again, here's another big departure from the movie. The castle is like welcoming and lit up. And he shows up and it's like they've been waiting for him. There's a fire. There's warm, dry clothes for him. There's a whole banquet set out for him. And he's sitting there and he's eating and the beast arrives. And the beast is not like ferocious and trying to chase him out of there. The beast is very welcoming. The beast is like super gracious and says like, don't be afraid of me. You know, I know you needed help. And so please feel free. You know, you're welcome to stay here. We're happy you're here. Have some food, warm yourself up. You know, we'll fix you up and send you on your way. And he's like, this is great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, oh, not only that, the beast says to him, oh, no, this is later. Okay. So the father, the beast is taking care of the father and the father's just like gradually feeling better. He starts kind of wandering around. He sees a beautiful rose in the beast's garden. He's like, oh, Beauty wanted a rose. And he picks it.
Yeah.
And then the beast.
And then the beast loses
is like,
his mind.
Are you kidding me?
Like he took diamonds or something, but he gets so mad that this man took the rose because that's the thing he really valued the most for whatever reason. So then he's like, all right, no, no, no. Now you're my prisoner. You're going to stay with me.
Yeah.
And he,
in fairness, I mean, he should have asked.
Yeah.
I feel.
Yes. I mean,
he should have asked.
Yeah. He lost his manners for a second there. But the beast says, so the beast finds out that he has kids, that he has children, excuse me, offspring. And the beast, basically, they make a deal. Like, what if I send my youngest daughter? Because he's like, well, I want a wife. So I'll take one of your daughters if not you. beauty being beauty, she offers to go. And
yeah, but one of the conditions is he has all these conditions. So he's like, okay, I'm going to let you go. But you're going to send me this youngest daughter. But here's the thing. She has to, she can't be coming here against her will. It has to be her choice. You know, if you can get one of your daughters to come here on her own free will to live here forever and ever, then, you know, I won't kill you. and so the father agrees. And then the beast is like, okay, well, since you're going home to try to, you know, make this happen for me, take anything you want. Take, you got all your other daughters. There's a whole bunch of gowns and stuff and jewelry. Take them all that. So he, not only that, like not only does he spare the father's life and take care of the father, he makes this deal with him. Yeah. Okay. But he like ladens him down with all kinds of gifts and riches and things for his family. So his family is going to be fine for a while. So he goes home and his kids only care about these presents. They're like, awesome. Yeah, dad, you scored. And the dad's like, yeah, but listen, here's the thing. And they don't care. They do not care at all. Like, they're like, no. Okay, great. Oh, beauty's going to go live with some ferocious monster. Okay, fine. Yeah. Bye. Don't let the door hit you.
And beauty goes. And beauty goes. And she goes
willingly. Again, this is similar. Let's, you know, she feels responsible because she had asked for this rose and her this whole mess is because her father stole the rose that was the one thing that she wanted. So she feels responsible.
Right.
And therefore it goes very willingly.
Yes. And she arrives and she and the beast, they start to become friends because she becomes friends with everybody. So some of the furniture comes to life and talks to her. Yeah. And she like has these very vivid dreams about her dad and her family back home.
And a prince
and a hot prince. And so she's like, woo, you know, she's not hating it exactly.
She's fine.
Yeah.
You know, she has everything. She has food. She doesn't have to work. She's not tilling the fields anymore. She has beautiful gowns to wear. And she has an unlimited supply of books at her disposal, which she loves.
Right. And that then, but one night she has a dream about her dad and she starts thinking about her dad and she's been there for maybe about a year. And she says to the beast, you know, I feel really bad, but I'd like to go home and see my father. If you can let me just go home and visit my father for 1 week, I promise you, I will come right back. And he's a little hesitant, but then he says, all right, you should go see your dad. That's probably a good idea because he's older. She goes and visits her father and then her family kind of makes her feel guilty that she's leaving in a week. And the sisters.
Yeah, because she showed the sisters are such an important part of the story. They're so creeps. Awful because she arrives when Beauty arrives. See, the sisters, when Beauty goes off to live with the beast, the sisters think like, oh, Beauty's going to go like be a prisoner and like live in a dungeon and it's going to be horrible. She's going to be, you know, ragged and thin and pale, and she shows up in like a beautiful gown and bedecked with jewel. I mean, she's fine.
Beautiful, like
she looks beautiful, and the sisters are jealous, and so the sisters and the brothers together are conspire to keep her there beyond the time that she's supposed to. She agreed that she would be there, and they do. They pull every trick in the book. You know, they guilt her into it. They deceive her. They're just terrible people.
But she eventually catches on. So about 10 days out, she heads back to see the beast. And she finds him and he's not in the house. And she's running around the house. Beast, beast, where'd you go? Where'd you go? Nobody knows where he is. And he's out in the yard and he's just dying. Because he started starving himself at the 1 week mark when she didn't come back. Cause she's like, oh, she really hated me. She's, you know, she's better off without me and I can't live without her. And she says, oh, no, please, please live. I need you to live. I love you. I love you. Please don't leave me. And they kiss. And then he changes into the prince and that relieves the spell. And she's like, nice, gore. And then they get married. Just it's the romance. It's all of that stuff. It's really
it's a great story. I really love
like I said, I really love all the stuff about the sisters. I really love in the long form one, you know, all the morality lessons about people who are your quote unquote friends when you're doing awesome and you've got mm-hmm. lots of money to blow on parties and, you know, nights out with them. You really get that the sisters especially, but also the brothers, you know, you get that, like, they just don't get it and they're as happy as they're ever going to be.
Right.
And what Beauty and the Beast have is a real thing. And yes, they have riches and a castle and, you know, anything they could possibly want, but that's not really the point. It's that they're happy that they have each other. It's great.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. I loved it.
I did too. And it's the basic story. I guess we'll just kind of fast forward a little to the 20th century, and Disney's been doing these animated features. I believe it's 1934 with Snow White. We talked about Sleeping Beauty last week. The quality of their films in the 60s and 70s, 80s varies.
Yeah. So like we talked about last time when we talked about Sleeping Beauty, again, is sort of considered the last hurrah of that first, like, really beautiful golden age of Disney animation. And one of the things that we talked about in our last episode, this is 1959, mm-hmm. you know, the American, you know, it's the dawn of the space age, like the look of American art and craft and all of that was changing really, really dramatically during this period. And, you know, Disney had a way that they did things and they were trying to adjust to the kind of more modern way. And it's a little clumsy. And it's sort of like they don't quite have their footing. You know, do we keep doing things like the really craftsmanlike way? Everything is hand-drawn, everything to like the nth degree of detail. Or do we kind of go more expressionistic, or do we go like, what are we doing here? And yeah, there's a few, you know, those in between years, mm-hmm. it's like, they don't quite know what they want to be a little bit. There's some good stuff that happens, but not as, you know, you don't just think like, oh, the great Disney era of 1960 to 1990. Per se.
Yeah. I mean, there's a few, obviously we grew up with Disney movies and some of them were really fun. I would say if you belong to Disney Plus now, when you, a few of these movies, and one of them, Margo, I was looking at Jungle Book and
yeah,
hadn't seen that
definitely
in a long time. And I remember really loving it. I had the album with the pages as a kid. You know?
I did too.
I loved it.
That one I did see on the big screen.
Yeah, me too. And then I just the other night, I'm like, oh, I'll just check this out. It's an hour and 15 minutes. And then big, long thing at the top saying, okay, this is a product of its time. There are some racial stereotypes that are going on here. They've never been okay, but we're not going to alter it. We're just going to explain this to you. And then you decide if you want to proceed, but just understand that we get it, that it's problematic.
Yeah. We know.
Yes.
Basically.
And
don't us.
And it's us. It's like the part of the movie I'm really most excited about, but then I'm like, oh boy, this is very racially insensitive and very like, yikes. So there's that. But there are also live action movies that they did that did really, really well.
Lots of great live action stuff that happened. And lots of, you know, live action with animation, like Bedknobs and Broomsticks, Mary Poppins. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And then, like, the whole Kurt Russell had a whole period where he was making the computer eat my tennis shoes or something like that. The computer wore tennis shoes, excuse me. There was Herbie the Love Bug. There was the Apple Dumpling Gang. There was all, which takes a lot less time than a cartoon, than an animated feature. So they, and then what stories do you tell? This fairy tales have been done over and over and over again. And then other people started doing them. Long story short, we go into the 80s. Jeffrey Katzenberg is now the president of the company, or the film company anyway. Disney's had some hits, and Little Mermaid just kind of shocked everybody and did really, really well. I mean, there hadn't been an animated feature that popular in a long time.
No, I don't think so. It was quite a big deal.
I babysat many kids taking them to see The Little Mermaid.
I saw it many times on VHS babysitting.
Yeah.
I didn't see it on the big screen, but I saw it many, many,
many times
on TV. Yeah.
It does really well. And so, and there's the it's Howard Ashman and the music of Alan Menken and Howard Ashman. And there's a documentary, and I started telling you yesterday, I found it by accident, called Howard.
It's so good, oh isn't God. It?
Howard yeah, Ashman is the lyricist.
Did you cry your eyes out?
Bawled my eyes out.
I know.
Bawled my eyes out. He's the one, he was an actor and a producer in New York City theater. He is the reason Little Shop of Horrors became this, which is my favorite musical by far. And I love musicals. But he knew how to tell stories and how to write lyrics that were catchy and meant something. And he was hired by Katzenberg they had a whole list of projects for him. Like, we're working on all this stuff, we'd like for you to come out. He's a total New Yorker. So he goes out to LA, meet with the Little Mermaid. He starts saying, like, well, she definitely wants legs and be a human, and she wants to go to shore, and that's what we're going to do. And they're like, they never thought about it that way. And that becomes a big success. So then they're like,
we were talking last time about, when we were talking about Sleeping Beauty and how much the lyrics did not help the story.
Exactly. The Sherman Brothers were not involved.
They were not good. No, the Sherman Brothers were decidedly not involved. The gleam in your eye is so familiar a gleam, is not telling us a story, right? It's not revealing anything about any of the characters. And it really, the movie kind of suffers for that. And yeah, and you get a little bit of that in early Disney, like, a dream is a wish your heart makes, hi ho, hi ho. I mean, he was really so brilliant at giving us the character, giving us their values, their passions, their fears, their desires, what their character traits are, and just like wrapping it all up in the catchiest song that you can't stop singing. Genius. Absolute genius.
There's a song called Kiss the Girl that's just like, it just starts happening and you can't stop. And they get to be known for this, but this is the second one, Beauty and the Beast. There was a TV show in the 80s about it. Remember that? Linda Hamilton. And yeah. Howard Ashman says, well, we're going to make Belle, we'll make her really smart. And that's going to be her thing, is the books. Like, that's going to be, Belle was a big deal for the time because there hadn't been a smart princess in a while.
No, she's just pretty and wants a prince.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Belle, the fact that Belle liked to read was a really big deal. That's hard to.
No, seriously. I know it sounds silly. It was just people's minds exploded. She reads. Oh, I should say, well, we'll talk about it. When she goes to the bookstore, and it's like such a popular meme when she's like in the bookstore and she's on the, on the ladder.
Let's play the trailer.
Yeah.
Okay. So here's the original 1991 trailer.
Walt Disney Pictures presents its all new 30th full length animated motion picture.
Is anyone here?
Mama, there's a girl in the castle.
Good.
A girl.
The classic story of Beauty and the Beast. He was a lonely beast, cursed by a mysterious spell. And she was the beautiful young girl who could set him and his kingdom free.
She's the one. She has come to break the spell.
They were two complete opposites.
I don't want to have anything to do with him.
She is being so difficult.
Until something wonderful happened.
There's something sweet.
Straighten up.
And almost kind.
Show me the smile.
But he was mean and he was coarse and unrefined. And now he's dear.
You look so.
And so unsure.
Stupid.
I wonder why I didn't see it there before.
It's a story filled with fun.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
Adventure.
Sacre bleu. Invaders.
And dozens of wonderful new Disney characters.
Keep it down.
Featuring six new songs from the Academy Award-winning composer and lyricist of The Little Mermaid.
Be our guest, be our guest.
This holiday season, share the fun, the magic, and the music of an entertainment event you'll never forget. Disney's Beauty and the Beast.
The sad part about this story is that lyricist Howard Ashman died 6 months before the movie came out. It was 40.
Again, they take a long time to make these movies.
Yes.
Years.
It takes a few years.
But still, he was, it was so soon.
Yeah, it was 40. Ugh. And he is the first person, I think, who died of AIDS-related complications for a posthumous Oscar. Because of that, his partner was the one that went on stage and accepted the award for him. They start the movie and they switch it around, and they have here the biggest people on Broadway that you could get, the best people.
Which is so smart to cast all stage people. Mm-hmm.
Angela Lansbury. Jerry Orbach. David Ogden Stiers. They're just these really, and Robbie Benson is our The Beast. You and I grew up with Robbie Benson, didn't we?
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah, he was not The Beast.
Oh,
come on. Talk about crying.
I mean, the tidy whiteys that he wore, and that sent me into puberty alone, that movie. That's a movie we all watched on VHS a number of times.
Definitely. Oof,
he's super hot. So he's The Beast. Paige O'Hara is Belle. And they had these incredible songs, basically.
The songs are so good. The songs are so good. I mean, just, I remember Howard Ashman, he had like names for like, it's this type of song, it's that type of song. Mm-hmm. It's the desire song, it's the love song, it's the this song, it's the that song. Just the whole like establishing song where she's in this little provincial town. This is not the life that she wants for herself. She's happy. She loves her dad and she likes her friends and everything, but this is not really what she wants out of life. And it's just so delightful because she goes through the town and those, you know, all the people that she meets in her neighborhood. And yeah, it's just right off the bat, you're just enraptured by these songs, by the lyrics and the music. It's wonderful.
And it's very French. And our protagonist.
It's Disney French, which is very fun.
Yes. And Gaston is the one that is this guy that has this biggest crush on her and wants to marry her, but he's a doofus and he's a brute.
You know, yeah, he is. But he's also, this movie is, again, it's hard to describe to people in 2021 how groundbreaking this was. Really, I mean, Gaston really is what, you know, in another era would have been Prince Charming. Mm-hmm. He's big, he's strong, he's popular. Everybody loves him. Everybody thinks he's funny. Everybody laughs at his jokes. You know, all the women love him. Of course, that is who you want, isn't it? Isn't that who everybody wants? And Belle's like, yeah, no.
Mm-mm. No.
Boy, Belle's gonna get the surprise of her life, huh, Gaston?
Yep, this is her lucky day. I'd like to thank you all for coming to my wedding. First, I better go in there and propose to the girl. Beautiful. Now, when Belle and I come out that door...
Oh, I know, I know. I strike up the band.
Not yet.
Sorry.
Gaston, what a pleasant surprise.
Isn't it, though? I'm just full of surprises. You know, Belle, there's not a girl in town who wouldn't love to be in your shoes. This is the day... this is the day your dreams come true.
What do you know about my dreams, Gaston?
Plenty. Here, picture this. A rustic hunting lodge, my latest kill roasting on the fire... My little wife massaging my feet while the little ones play on the floor with the dogs. We'll have 6 or 7.
Dogs?
No, Belle. Strapping boys like me.
Imagine that.
Do you know who that little wife will be?
Let me think.
You, Belle.
Gaston, I'm speechless. I really don't know what to say.
Say you'll marry me.
I'm very sorry, Gaston, but... I just don't deserve you.
Whoa!
A And he by the house. And she tries very delicately to, she turns him down, but tries to do it in the nicest possible way.
She's super nice about it, considering he just shows up and is like, you're marrying me.
Right. And we're having 12 kids.
You lucky thing.
Yes. He's so vain. I mean, it's like, that's what's part of it. It's like also what makes it funny. Now, I forget, like, why did her dad?
So this is, again, this part, there's no siblings.
Right.
It's just Bella and her dad. We don't know what happened to her mom because it's Disney. What is it with moms, man? Why? What happened to Mr. Walt?
Bambi,
Snow White, Little Mermaid.
Yeah.
You know, one after Cinderella.
Mary Poppins.
Lady and the Tramp. One after another. Yeah. Anyway. So there's no siblings. The dad is not, he's not a merchant. So she was, in the movie, she was never rich. We don't have that riches to rags element about, you know, the with the moral about, you know, why perhaps a material life isn't like the greatest pursuit ever. So her dad, we're led to believe that they've always been kind of, you know, not wealthy. They've always kind of struggled a little bit. And the dad is an inventor.
Right.
And I'm not really clear on what this is. It like a car? What is this thing that he's invented that he's all excited about?
Oh, it's an automatic wood chopper. Right?
Oh, it's an automatic wood chopper. Okay.
Yeah.
And so he's going to take it to the fair. It's like a John Deere wood chopper kind of dealy. Ride along wood chopper. So he's going off. So the father goes off because he's taking his wood chopper to the fair to exhibit it, I guess. Oh, I actually know somebody in this movie.
Who?
When she goes to the bookstore again, when she's on the ladder and like she swoops across the bookshelves. So the man who plays the bookseller, Alvin Epstein, who again was one of probably the foremost Shakespearean Beckett, you know, actors in the US, if not the world, like super big deal theater guy. I mean, at that point he was, you know, already a senior citizen, but he was one of Todd's teachers.
Oh, wow.
In grad school. So Todd worked with him quite a bit. Lovely man. Just the sweetest, dearest, sweet man. So yeah, we were watching, we're like, oh, so sweet to hear his voice. And I think it was right after this movie had come out was when about the time that Todd was working with him. So it was like this huge deal that he was in this great big, you know, Disney movie.
It was a big deal. This movie, once again,
huge deal.
It was a huge deal.
People had bell themed weddings with the yellow gown
and the prom dresses.
Big deal.
And it was back when a movie would be in theaters for a year. It just always made money. And Disney had a thing, like, I think it was every 7 years they released something.
They would put it back out again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So something would be gone for a while and then it would come back. Yeah. So you didn't know. Yeah.
You couldn't just stream it.
Yeah. So there were just people who were constantly buying Disney. Apparently, by the way, Margo, if you have those original 1980s, maybe early 90s, VHS tapes with that plastic covering that had all the artwork on it.
I might.
They're worth money on eBay.
Stop it.
No, hundreds of dollars.
Stop it. There's probably some in a bin in my mom's house right now.
You should look.
That's hilarious. Yeah. That's so funny. But anyway, so the father has his little invention. He's taking it to the fair.
He gets lost. Right.
So it's totally different from in the book. He gets lost. He's stuck in the woods. His horse runs away. And he's being attacked by wolves.
And the beast shows up. And when the beast shows up, it's terrifying. He's huge.
He's going to kill him.
Yeah. And the beast is not hey, come on in.
He's not hospitable.
Have some pasta, hang out.
Yeah, the dad goes into the castle. And I don't remember if he gets food. Nobody's happy to see this guy. Nobody's welcoming the dad to the castle. It's a very begrudging. The beast, not only does he not welcome him and feed him and give him a fire to sip, he puts him in a dungeon.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, so the deal is made that he'll let him go, but Belle has to live with him.
Yeah, Belle goes looking for him and ends up at the castle. And she's like, you got my father in a dungeon. Take me instead. And he's like, okay.
Fine.
Yeah, sure.
And he, by the way, they have a whole origin story for him at the top of the movie, that he was a very handsome prince, but very vain.
Right.
And a woman came by who was a beggar, and he turned her away. And she's like, I'll curse you, buddy, because I'm super hot chick underneath all of this. And you were mean to me. And so I'm going to teach you a lesson, and I'm going to make you into a beast. And until somebody loves you truly, you're going to remain like this. And it happened to everybody in the castle. So there's a woman that
everybody in his whole life is enchanted now, which is how it is in the book. Yeah. That's what happened. That's how he ends up like that. Oh, and in the book, I should say, I forgot to mention, in the book, Belle, at least in the version that I read, Belle has this idea that the Beast has kidnapped the prince, that they're two different people, mm-hmm. and that the Beast is holding the prince hostage in this castle somewhere, that she needs to find him and free him. Because I think in her dream, he's telling her that needs to be set free. She doesn't put two and two together.
Right.
Here, her dad's been locked up. The Beast is just trying to figure out how he's going to kill this guy. And she offers herself in his place.
And he takes her in. And then he doesn't put her in the dungeon. He puts her in a pretty decent room. She meets the Mrs. Potts and Chip. She meets Joanne Worley, plays the cabinet. Ugh.
I mean, the whole thing is just so great. Joanne Worley.
I mean, when was the last time you heard about her? I mean, it's just.
I love her.
I do too. And
she's great. It's perfect.
Yeah.
Of course she's the wardrobe.
And they explain to her what the deal is, and, you know, why don't you hang out and maybe you can make this work? Because they know if he falls in love and somebody falls in love with him.
Yeah, we're all free
from the spell.
Yeah.
So they're encouraging this. They're kind of like, oh, no, this is not so bad. Why don't you go to dinner, hang out, talk to him for a while.
Give him a chance.
Give him a chance. Come on. Yeah, you've been with worse.
You locked your dad up in a dungeon. But
there's a lot of now that nowadays people say, like, oh, he's holding her hostage. There's all this stuff. Like, I can't begin to tell you. It didn't matter. Like, we just were like along with this. I was just glad she was
Nobody
smart.
Cared. Oh, just, no.
I was glad she was not an idiot.
I mean, as a little girl, when I had the book, I had a beautiful, I wish I could find it. I have it here. It's here in my house somewhere. It's probably down in the basement. But I have my copy of Beauty and the Beast from when I was a kid. I had this beautiful edition of it somebody gave me. No, I was never bothered for a nanosecond.
It's a fairy tale.
I was more bothered by the Disney Sleeping Beauty that the baby was betrothed to the boy than I was ever bothered about Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah. I mean, it's a fairy tale. We have to remember that. The themes are going to be very broad and there's going to be high stakes. I mean, it's just going to be over the top.
Yeah. But you know what, too? You know what, too, now that I think about it, not in the movie and not in any of the books that I've ever read of Beauty and the Beast, she's never like trying to run away. She's never wishing she could get out of there.
No, and he never hurts her.
He never gives her all the books she wants.
Yeah.
You know, and she's never like scheming to find a way to run away. She's, even when she's worried about her dad, she's like, oh, you know, listen, I really should go and see about him. And he's like, yeah, you should. So I think if it would be different if she was like unhappy or, again, you know, wishing that, if only I could get out of here. But we're not told that that ever happens. She seems perfectly fine.
She adapts. She's a very adaptable person. She learns to, like, she takes him for walks and they get closer. And he has this beautiful library. And as a book lover, as a kid, I was like, oh, that would be my dream to have, you know, a library like that.
It's pretty spectacular.
It's
pretty great.
He's really doing it right.
I've never felt this way about anyone. I want to do something for her. But what?
Well, there's the usual things. Flowers, chocolates, promises you don't intend to keep.
Ah, no, no.
It has to be something very special. Something that sparks her interest. Wait a minute.
first, you have to close your eyes. It's a surprise.
Can I open them?
No, no, not yet. Wait here.
Now can I open them?
All right. Now.
I can't believe it. I've never seen so many books in all my life.
You like it?
It's wonderful.
Then it's yours.
Oh, thank you so much.
Would you look at that?
I knew it would work.
What works?
It's very encouraging.
Isn't this exciting?
I didn't see anything.
Come along, Chip. There's chores to be done in the kitchen.
But what are they talking about?
He's really doing right. And supposedly, and he can do this, Robbie Benson. Like, I was like, oh, they just took his voice and put it through a machine to make him all those. No.
That's I thought voice. That too when I first saw it. No, that is his real voice.
He can really do that. I mean, so, oh, by the way, I forgot to mention, this was 30 years ago this comes out, this month.
Oh.
Yeah, it was November of 1991. So we're on the we're on trend with all these things. I love Be Our Guest. I think that's just such a, what a great song that is. It's just,
The whole thing is so dazzling. The music is amazing. First of all, the music, you're in.
You're in.
Just, you know, you're just in. And then what else can you call it? The choreography of all of these inanimate objects. I mean, it's like a Fantasia level mm-hmm. of animation. It's just, you just want to watch it over and over and over again. It's so, there's so many details, so many things to look at. And it's also beautifully choreographed. It's brilliant.
And Jerry Orbach plays Lumiere, who's he's the candlestick candelabra.
I mean, it's just wonderful.
And if you didn't know this, if you only knew him from Law and Order as Lenny Briscoe.
I always think of him as the boyfriend on One Day at a Time.
Or the dad in...
He was Anne Romano's boyfriend.
Oh, he was her
boyfriend. Oh, no, she was the ex. He was the ex-husband.
And there it was also... there was also he was the father in Dirty Dancing, right? He's the dad.
He's the father in Dirty Dancing. He was Dorothy's love interest, the cop on Golden Girls.
The best Golden Girls episode. George Clooney's in that episode
with
too.
George Clooney. Mm-hmm.
My favorite.
Yeah, that's a fave. Girls.
That's one of my favorites.
Yep.
But in the seven, before this, he was a Broadway star and very handsome. He was in Chicago, the original Chicago. I love the way they give him kind of a Fosse kind of step that he does when he puts the hat
okay,
on his head.
How do you choreograph a candlestick?
Yes.
To do a Fosse
nod, you know.
Nod. What?
Yeah.
What? Get out of here.
Yeah.
Get out of here. This whole, I don't care. I don't care if it took 8 buildings of animators to make that happen. Worth it.
It's worth
every penny.
Every penny. It's worth every second. So at one point, Beauty has to go home and visit her dad. Belle has to go home. Excuse me. She's called Belle here. There's this whole point where the town wants to, like Gaston wants to protect her because he thinks she's being held against her will and he wants to prove.
He also kind of wants to blackmail her into marrying him.
Yeah. And then there's this whole scene where, what's the name of the song where they're going into town and basically the townies, the villagers are going back and they're kind of chanting to one another about getting him out of there. Like they have the torches and stuff. And
they're going to go kill the beast.
Yes. And Howard Ashman said, this is sort of like he was dealing with AIDS at the time.
Back again, then, a hard thing to describe to people.
Right.
Who didn't live through that era.
No.
What it was like.
I forget his name. He's Adam Carolla's friend, Dennis Prager. He put out a Twitter tweet recently saying about people. Like, can you imagine, you're talking about vaccinated people, unvaccinated people. And he says, can you imagine people back in when AIDS was a crisis, people being against gay people and HIV people and treating them as if they were different and other and all. I'm like, that's all people did.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
It's exactly, what? I remember this.
That's like people didn't want to touch a doorknob that they thought somebody who maybe was gay touched.
Exactly.
I mean, here, I will tell you, I was just thinking about this the other day, and probably because I was reading this book and getting ready for this episode. There is a a wonderful organization in, if you're in San Diego, those of you who may be listening from San Diego, there's a wonderful organization called Mama's Kitchen. Every year they do a Thanksgiving pie sale. So if you haven't bought your pies yet, or you don't want to bake your pies, get them from Mama's Kitchen. They get them from the best restaurants in San Diego County. $20, I think it's $20 for a pie. And, it's an organization that today they bring hot meals to, cancer patients and AIDS patients all over the county. But it started here in my neighborhood during the AIDS epidemic because patients were, it's hard, again, it's hard to really describe the paranoia that was happening.
It was a death sentence.
Patients who really should have been in the hospital under medical supervision in the hospital, the medical staff did not want to touch them. And so they would be sent home. And so there were AIDS patients who were dying, not from AIDS, but they were starving to death, mm-hmm. Because people just didn't want to go near them. They couldn't, and they were too sick to cook for themselves or go grocery shopping for themselves. And so Mama's Kitchen started as a way of bringing meals to these patients, just in our little area right here. And then again, it's expanded throughout the county. I mean, literally, like, people didn't want you didn't even know what anybody's AIDS status was. Just if somebody was gay,
they would know somebody who had AIDS.
If you thought somebody maybe would be gay, you know, people would again not want to sit next to them in the meeting at work, or not want to touch the coffee cup that they drank out of. I mean, it was really that bad. Which, again, just to be clear, that is not how AIDS is transmitted.
No, it's not.
There's no way that you could get it that way.
Right.
But it was so the hysteria. And then on top of that, you know, for all your moaning and groaning about not wanting to touch them or touch anything that they touched, there sure was a lot of hate crime and attacks going on as well.
Right.
They were being physically just assaulted, you know, in my neighborhood, just in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
People would come into the neighborhood and just beat people up on the street in the middle of the day. It was super bad. So yeah, it was very much like a mob, you know, angry, thoughtless mob coming after you.
And that's sort of like what's going on underneath this scene. We'll go right to the kicker. That the Beast, vanquishes the crowd, but he's injured, and Belle comes back just in time. He's dying, and then all he can say is like, "You came back. Oh my God! Like, you didn't stay. You know, you're here with me in my last moments." And I know gives me all the feels. It's
so sweet. I know.
Back.
Of course I came back. I couldn't let them. Oh, this is all my fault. If only I'd gotten here sooner.
Maybe. It's better. It's better this way.
Don't talk like that. You'll be all right. We're together now. Everything's going to be fine, you'll see.
And at least I got to see you. One last time.
No. Please. Please. Please don't leave me. I love you.
And also, we should say, like, again, like, this movie is just so brilliant. I love all the scenes, like the scenes where the mob is chasing him and he's fighting Gaston. I mean, it's so majestic and dramatic, and the lighting and the lightning and the storm and the, oh, it's just spectacular. It's so well directed.
Yeah.
It's great. It's so sad. You know, we think he's dying, and well, she feels, again, she feels responsible. Because she kind of is, in a way. You could certainly look at it that way. But anyway, so she really loves him.
Yeah.
And the other thing I really appreciate about the way, again, because it's a kids' movie, really, I really loved that. Again, unlike when we were talking about Sleeping Beauty, where it's a little clunky, where we're like, okay, he just met this woman, she just fell asleep, and now he's fighting a dragon. Because he loves her. Okay. He heard her singing in a forest one time. whereas in this movie, by the time we get to this point where we think the beast is dying and she's there, like you understand, you know, even a small child understands that they have a deep connection and they really love each other. And we have seen that bond with them kind of grow over the course of the movie. And so you as a viewer, even a child viewing this, I think would be very invested in that. And yeah, you're just like, oh, no, he can't die.
But
I just think they did such a great job of that. Just the whole way that they set that up, I think is just perfect.
I forgot to mention, so it's directed by Gary Truesdale, Kirk Wise, and the screenplay is by Linda Wolverton. And there's a ton of people who work on the story. I mean, the story is, it's like a dozen people that have to kind of make all this come together, and it's amazing.
Yeah, and you can see it. Yeah, and I get, you know, again, we talk about this all the time, that when you go from book to movie, it has to get pared down. Like most of the time, you can't have all the characters. She can't have 11 brothers and sisters.
No.
She simply cannot. We have to really pare this down here, folks, and really just get to the nugget of the story and the parts that are going to be the most fun to do on film.
Right. I mean, there's already Cinderella, you know, with the wicked stepsisters. So we don't need that again. Spoiler alert, the beast lives. He transforms back into the handsome prince that he was, and the servants go back, and the butler and all, they all go back to their human forms. They kiss, and then there's a big ball, and everyone's invited to the ball, and I guess it's their wedding, and it's just, it ends on that song, Beauty and the
Beauty
Beast.
And the Beast, which, I'm sorry, I know this might be controversial, Angela Lansbury greater than Celine Dion.
It's got more song, feeling to it. When Angela Lansbury's singing it with Chip sitting there and they're setting up the romance, it's all the little beats are there. Like they're just discovering, like, you know, Celine is Celine Dion and Peebo Bryson are
she
just.
She is. And it's again, to me, it's that, yeah, it's not just, I mean, we've established how much I love Angela Lansbury.
Right.
I won't go on too much this time, but it is that. The theater, the theatrical rendition of it versus the slick studio vocalist version of it for me. I mean, and listen, Celine Dion sings her booty off. You know, I mean, I'm not saying she's not singing this song. I mean, everything she sings.
No, she's a diva.
She's a freakishly talented vocalist. We all agree. But that's different than, again, performing the story of a song and imparting, giving you a whole like narrative. And I mean, Angela Lansbury, just that first line, she's given you this whole story, like all about the curse and all that. It's all in that first line right there. It's just, I love her version of that song.
As old as time, true as it can be, barely even friends, they're somebody bends unexpectedly. Just a little change, small to say the least, both a little scared, neither one prepared. Beauty and the Beast.
I can't recommend enough. If you get Disney Plus, you can find it. It's called Howard, and Howard Ashman's career is just fantastic. But they show 6 months before the movie came out, they recorded in New York City with a huge orchestra. And to watch Howard Ashman giving notes to Jerry Orbach, like, these are the words you need to punctuate. And he's an actor.
It's like goosebumps.
Yeah. It's so amazing.
It's so good. And I know.
I know. It's like, yeah, it made $400 million at the time. It was in the theaters forever. It was nominated for a bunch of Oscar Academy Awards. I mean, it became an attraction. There are so many sequels that are out that I couldn't possibly name them all. It's just a classic. And I can't imagine. I don't know. I love the dog that's the footstool that barks.
All the animation is so well done.
It was nominated for Best Picture.
And all
of
the performances. Well, it's phenomenal.
Which was a big deal because it was an animated movie. People were like, why is a cartoon nominated? I'm like,
because it's Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah. But it won for Best Original Score, Best Original Song, and it was nominated for Best Sound. And it won Grammy Awards, it's Golden Globes. I mean, just, and it holds up 30 years later. It totally holds up.
I know. Now as a parent, again, when it came out, I was like a college kid. I was in my teens and I don't really care. I was like, yeah, it was a kid's movie. Meh. I didn't hate it if I had to watch it, if I was babysitting, you know, but I wasn't really paying that close attention. I was like, oh, they changed it from the book. I had kind of a bad attitude about it. But now as a grown up and a parent of a daughter, you know, when you look at the pantheon of Disney princesses, mm-hmm. you really think about any of them, you know, let's say I love Cinderella. What do I, as a little girl, what can I do to be like Cinderella? What is the thing that she does that I can do to be like her? Oh, she's pretty.
She's awful pretty.
She's pretty and she wears a glass slipper. Okay. Or she cleans.
She cleans really well. She takes orders very well.
You know, and the same thing like Snow White. Okay. Well, she does all the laundry for the dwarves. You know, what does she do? What does she care about? I don't know. And you know, again, I'll bring it up now, but Ariel wants this man. And so what does she do to get him? She gives up her voice. She literally gives up her voice.
That's the patriarchy for a man. For you.
So to have a princess where, what can I do to be like her? Oh, she's brave. She's smart. Mm-hmm. She stands up for herself. She stands up for the people she loves. She, you know,
she's kind.
She likes to read, you know, these are all of it. Yes.
Cosine. Yes. Yeah. So book versus movie.
Well, movie. Come on. This movie is, geez. Although the book is wonderful. I mean, it really is very good. And I really loved it. It's not very long, but I really loved having just like the space to explore some of the themes that are in the book. Really nice details. Again, it's 18th century France. So, you know, opulence and all this kind of stuff. And it's great. It's really, really good. I think, you know, if you love Beauty and the Beast, read it. And it's definitely something I would say, maybe not for little kids. They might not be able to hold their attention.
No.
But I would say, like my 8-9-year-old niece who likes to read would probably like it. But this movie, it's so good. It's so good. It's so good from start to finish. And I mean, everything is on an 11.
Right.
You know, the animation is just out of this world. But all of it, just like we were talking about with Sleeping Beauty, you know, if that music were not, you know, if that music, well, we could probably get away with, it didn't have to be at that level, but if it were what we were talking about with Sleeping Beauty,
yeah,
I don't know. You know, I don't know how well it would have gone over. These songs are so well written, and so you just instantly connect with them. You love them. You instantly love them. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah. I agree 100%. Everything you've just said.
So movie. What are we doing next?
Well, we have... We've had a few suggestions. Little Mermaid is on there, by the way. A Hunchback of Notre Dame. I don't know if Pocahontas is... Oh, yeah,
that's the one with Tom Hulce.
Yes, and Demi Moore.
Yeah, yeah.
There's Cinderella. There's...
Okay, well, we should say, though, Hunchback is like 3 inches.
Yeah, I didn't know if that was a short book. Yeah, yeah, okay.
It's a super, super long book.
Yeah, well, there's Frozen, and that's a Hans Christian Andersen story. There's Pinocchio, which I haven't seen since I was a kid.
I haven't seen that one since I was a kid either.
I don't think that's a long one.
No, it's a, I don't think so. I read it when I have, oh gosh, I don't know if my mom still has it. I had the original book translated, of course. Mm-hmm. It, as I recall, it was pretty scary, but I think it might be kind of long.
Yeah.
I kind of remember it being kind of long.
Little Mermaid, Cinderella, Frozen, Pocahontas, Bambi.
Let's do Bambi.
Oh, okay.
Because we talked about there's a Nazi thing with Bambi too.
Yes, yes, there is something. Right? Yeah, let's do it.
There's some kind of historical interesting Easter eggs with that one. Yeah, I should say, you know, and I love Hans Christian Andersen. I really do. I really loved those stories as a kid, but I was always infuriated by the Little Mermaid.
Yeah.
Because she, although unlike in, okay. Yeah. Here, spoiler alert. I don't know that I want to do the Little Mermaid.
Okay.
Here's why. I don't like the message. I don't like the message of the movie. And in the book, like we're not thinking that's an awesome choice that she makes, and she loses her life. Like she loses her life. Her sisters die. They turn into, spoiler alert, they turn into sea foam. Everybody is ruined by her very bad decisions. The Little Mermaid. So it is a morality tale in that regard. And you know that you should, but that's not, you know.
Yeah. I don't think favorite. It's, I think, yeah.
I don't like the message.
No, that's fine with me. We'll do Pinocchio.
Okay.
We can do Frozen next time. Like we can finish.
Although I do love that song where she talks about all the human stuff.
Who?
The mermaid.
I like Kiss the Girl. I think that.
I will say this. One of the best. Oh, Sebastian's lovely. One of the best villains
is
in all of Disney. Ursula.
Ursula, who's based on Divine. Performer Divine. I'm like, yeah. Oh, when I heard that.
I do. So there's things I like about it, but overall, like I was not like encouraging my daughter to watch that movie.
No, we'll go different. We just talked about a princess. Let's talk about an animal. Let's talk about Bambi.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
Well, thank you all so much for listening. This is a month of Disney. Please reach out to us on all the things for your suggestions for books and movies. We forgot to mention that it needs to be something we can get our hands on. So it has to be available on Kindle or on the Libby app, where the paperback can show up pretty quickly. If it's something we have to get on eBay or especially with those, it's got to be streaming. It's got to be available on streaming. If we can't get to it.
We don't want people paying $60 to watch any of these movies.
Right, exactly. Or to read the books.
Let alone us.
Right, let alone us. So that's part of the reason. So just double check that when you offer suggestions. But we've used song titles, magazine articles. You never know what's been adapted. If it's just a film you like, maybe you never know. Find out. We're going to talk off the air because we have some ideas for the holidays coming up. We're very excited about that here. Margo, in the meantime, where can people find you?
You can find me online at coloniabook.com, and all of my social media callouts are at She's Not Your Mama. And where can they find you?
You can find me on social media at Brooklyn Fitchick. My site is brooklynfitchick.com. Everyone be safe, and we will be back soon with a new episode.
Ma chère mademoiselle, it is with deepest pride and greatest pleasure that we welcome you tonight. And now,
thank you so much for listening to the Book vs. Movie podcast. We are a part of the Frolic Podcast Network. You can find more podcasts you will love at frolic.media/podcasts. We follow the hashtags LadyPodSquad and Potter and Family. If you want to support the show, you can go to our Patreon page. Go to P-A-T-R-E-O-N and look for Book versus Movie Podcast. We have a basic Facebook page, but we also have a private Facebook group. Go to Facebook and type in Book vs. Movie Podcast Group if you want to join that. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Book vs. Movie. Spell all those words out. If you'd like to send us an email, it's Book vs. Movie Podcast, spell that all out, at gmail.com. You can follow Margot D. at Brooklyn Fit Chick on social media, and Margot P. at She's Nacho Mama. Thanks so much again for checking out our show, and we'll be back soon with a new episode.
While the flatware is entertaining, we tell jokes, I do tricks with my fellow candlesticks.
Put it all in perfect taste that you can bear.
Come on and lift your glass, you've won your own free pass to be our guest. If you're stressed, it's fine dining, we suggest. Be our guest, be our guest, be our guest. Life is so unnerving for a servant who's not serving. He's not whole without a soul to wait upon. Ah, those good old days when we were useful. Suddenly those good old days are gone. 10 years we've been rusting, needing so much more than dusting, needing exercise, a chance to use our skills.